I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
Hi, I'm Christos Gate.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gate.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan.
And this is Victor Dandridge.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
Going home to the place where wild nerds roam.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 43, one shy of my lucky number, and I can't wait to get to episode 44, but we're at 43 now. Thank you once again to Kevin Smith for giving us that wonderful info in introduction, and Kevin Sorbo just for being Kevin Sorbo. Love that guy. A little weird on the politics, but I still love that guy. And with me, as always, I'm Tom Strange, and with me, as always, are my best friends since I was a little kid, Mike Manning. How are you doing?
I don't know who the hell you are and what you're doing on this podcast.
You know I love you. And Josh Opper, how you doing over there, buddy?
A year older, but mentally a year younger.
There you go. Go for one step forward, two steps back. Did you buy your son the bed we talked about last episode?
Not yet.
You're a terrible parent. Just putting that out there. LT, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I made a meringue pie using a blowtorch yesterday, and I will put that video up on our Twitter page so people can watch me use a blowtorch to make a dessert. It is awesome.
Was it sugar-free?
No, it would kill you immediately.
See,
everything
you don't
I make
love
in
me.
That bakery.
I know how it is.
I just have a hit on you from your wife. She wants me to try to slip you sugar so you'll go into a diabetic coma and die already.
I am fairly certain that I'm worth more dead to her.
We all are worth more dead to our wives than we are alive. And speaking of that thin line between life and death, who has walked it more than today's episode's main character, John Constantine? That's how you pivot, folks. John Constantine, one of the greater, better anti-heroes, named one of the 100 best characters in comic books by Rolling Stone magazine a couple years ago. I love this character. Mikey, would you like to give us a little backstory of John Constantine, the Hellblazer?
Yes.
Oh, the drama. Carry on.
I hate you with every dram of my being. Go.
So John Constantine first appeared in the Saga of the Swamp Thing number 37, which is sort of accurate. That was his first appearance. However, he appeared in Crisis on Infinite Earth number 4 2 weeks earlier, which was supposed to be his second appearance, but it shipped out before Swamp Thing. He was created by Alan Moore, Stephen Bissett, and John Todleben. And the legend goes that the artists wanted to draw Sting in a comic, so Alan Moore created this occult detective who had a credible resemblance to Sting. The only difference is he had an earring, because back in 1985, I guess that was cutting edge. Constantine is a humanist. He hates both sides of the evil good spectrum. Although he tries to do good in his life, he doesn't like angels, and he certainly does not like devils and demons. He uses his occult-like powers to go around and help people in need. However, because he's such a tragic figure, anybody who ends up getting really close to Constantine always ends up having something horrible happen to him. And Constantine also abuses his friendships. One of the reasons he does that is because he knows anybody that gets really close to him ends up getting hurt. So he uses people to push them away from him, although he makes friends really easy. So he started off in Swamp Thing and then got his own series called The Hellblazer, which lasted from 1988 to 2013. So 25 years of a comic book is pretty incredible. As I said before, he is an occult detective, but he doesn't like to cast spells if he can avoid it because he knows that the price of magic is dangerous. But it hasn't stopped him from being tied into the major characters in the DC universe. He was a member of Justice League Dark and has been used in many different comics. Whenever there's some sort of supernatural cosmic threat, Constantine's usually got his hand in it somewhere.
That was a great backstory. Thank you for being able to tell us that entire backstory, even though you know you have a bit of a sore throat. Get well soon. I came to John Constantine kind of late in life. I didn't see him until Justice League Dark and then the TV show. And, of course, I did love the movie. Did you guys like the movie?
It actually was good.
The movie. I haven't really seen the movie. I saw parts of it, but I haven't seen the whole thing.
Even though I'm not a huge fan of Canoe, I did like the movie.
I kind of like Keanu Reeves, and I love that movie. I think it was a great gateway for me because then I started reading John Constantine ones, and so I became a fan kind of later in the series. Tommy, who here has been a fan the longest? Who liked him from the beginning?
It certainly isn't me because the only thing I've read with him in it has been Justice League Dark.
Well, then we're going to get back to you. All right, Mikey, Okay. Tell us your favorite run.
That would be The Hellblazer from 1988 to 2013. I didn't collect it the whole time, but there was a run on it of well over 100 issues right at the very beginning when it became a Vertigo title. That one of my favorite authors, Garth Ennis, was writing. And in that series, which really defined Constantine, in my opinion, as the lovable bastard that he is. Constantine is always trying to get out of deals, and they did something that I didn't think I'd see in comics. They gave Constantine lung cancer because he was a habitual smoker, and they showed him suffering through it and trying his darndest to try to figure out how to get out of dying from lung cancer. It's a great series, and like I said, if you want to check out The Hellblazer, go check out Garth Ennis's run on The Hellblazer.
Yeah, that I didn't read that comic book until fairly recently, and I really enjoyed that. They touched upon that a little bit in the movie, of course. They changed it a little bit, but they touched upon it, and I really enjoyed it. Josh, when did you come across John Constantine?
So he kind of like walked in and out of some other books I read, and I never really for a long time, I didn't even put that together that he was Hellblazer, because he kind of like wandered through books of magic, and they never really referred to him as Hellblazer there. But like he met up with Baron Winters there in the books of magic, and occasionally he would show up in Etrigan, but only as John Constantine. So I honestly didn't know that he had his own comic, probably for years before I realized where the crossovers were happening. But I really loved Etrigan, and I liked Books of Magic, so I saw him sort of come and go through those storylines, but I never really sat down and went back and read the original material.
And the Books of Magic is probably one of the best ways. If you're looking to get into DC Comics occult, that is the perfect introduction, because in the Books of Magic, they take a novice character all through the DC supernatural realms.
It's very well done. I love Books of Magic.
Books of Magic, that's got to be one I get because I don't have it, and it sounds terrific. LT, why don't you go ahead and tell us what yours is, and I'll pick up the scraps after that.
So I read Justice League Dark Volume 1, which had Constantine kind of going in and out in it. He was kind of drawn into the story. The storyline was focusing majorly on basically, there I am using that word, the Enchantress had gone insane and was kind of mucking up everything in the world because June Moon had been separated from her, and she was desperately trying to get back with June Moon, and June Moon was desperately trying to stay away from Huntress. I'm sorry, from Enchantress. And John Constantine got pulled into the fray because of his relationship with Santana, and he eventually put June Moon and Enchantress back together again to kind of resolve the situation, even though everybody else in the team was kind of trying to prevent that, except for Madame Xanadu, who was kind of on board with it because she saw the future and it was going to be quite horrible.
Yeah, and of course June Moon comes into play, and the Enchantress comes into play in the Suicide Squad movie. I didn't make that connection until just now. I also really like Justice League Dark. One of my favorite things about Justice League Dark is my favorite character of Justice League Dark is the House of Mystery. Would you guys agree that that house is almost a character in and of itself?
I think it is almost a character.
Wow, that's the first time anyone's ever yes-and me here. Thank you, Tommy.
It's been in the DC universe for so long, and it had its own comic book for a pretty decent amount of time. I think it really does have sort of a subtle characteristic about it.
Well, thank you, Tommy. Thank you for yes-anding me on that one, because it was kind of a stretch.
No problem.
But
Tom,
I really have always thought of, you know, the House of Mystery when it comes up in this particular series as like almost its own guy. I mean, it's got a little bit of personality to it. It only serves Constantine for the moment because Constantine has a key that means he's part owner. And yeah, so my favorite series is also that series. But I gotta say, I also really love the TV show. The TV show I thought stayed pretty true to the character, and some people might want to argue with me on that, and that's fine. And I was so happy when I saw Constantine show up in the Green Arrow, that I was beside myself. I thought that was terrific. And, yeah, that's kind of my take on John Constantine. I didn't really get to know him until later, and I love the metaphysical, you know, sorcery stuff. So yeah, he's a good fit for me. I really like him. I'm going to check out a lot more now that I know more about him.
I really wanted to give the TV show a chance, but, yeah, that's a no-go for me.
Really? Well, what didn't you like, Josh?
I don't know. It was just so whitewashed. I don't know. I just couldn't take it. And also, I can't feel that guy as John Constantine. I don't know.
I think the problem was you were watching it on network television, which kind of whitewashed it anyways, but it was building towards something. If you'd given it more time, if the network had given it more time, I think it would have been a really great show. I think if it had been on like AMC or a cable channel or Netflix or something like that, it would have been phenomenal, because then you could have binge watched it and you could have seen it progress and build up to what it was. I mean, I got really excited when Felix Faust made an appearance on Constantine.
Oh, yeah, I lost my natty when that happened. That was so cool. Can I say natty? Yeah, I lost my natty. Does
Maybe
anyone
I'll
else
give
have?
Another oh, shot, and, but I don't know.
Give it another shot. Justice League Dark, the film, by the way, is coming out in 2017. Has anyone watched the trailer?
No, I didn't even realize.
No, didn't even know there was a trailer.
The trailer is out there. The Justice League Dark is a cartoon, much like the...
Oh, just a cartoon.
It is a cartoon.
So it's in the same vein as the Batman animated cartoon movies?
Well, yeah, like the movies, like the Red Mask and all of those. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's good. It looks good so far. It's got a lot of good people attached to it. So let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that maybe the Justice League Dark gets their own TV show out of it, because that would be awesome. That's just me. I'm very upbeat this week.
They originally had Justice League Dark planned as a movie with Guillermo del Toro directing.
Oh.
Oh, now you're just making me sad that didn't happen. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that does sound
a little cool.
It'd be better if any of us could actually pronounce that producer's name without mucking it up so terribly.
Guillermo del Toro?
Hey, that's really good, Tommy. I know you're waiting for me to say something terrible after that, but that was really good, Tommy.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Wow, this scotch must be really kicking in. Mikey, do you got anything fun for us at the front of the long box tonight?
Well, I think Josh had some other comments, though, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Josh. Go ahead.
That's okay. I just worry the turn of, let's say, once again, the whitewashing of thing as a cartoon. Like Justice League Dark seems like something that should not be. I don't mind serious animated stuff, but we all know it's not going to be that dark and gritty as it should be in the cartoon form.
They got Jason Blood in there for you.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. They're doing the Killing Joke as an animated feature.
Oh, well, I've seen some of the cuts from the Killing Joke. That's borderline porno. It is. Have you seen the Batgirl Batman love scene? No joke, no pun intended.
No.
Well, they have sex on a roof. Watch the trailer. It's in the trailer, for God's sakes. Just in case anyone was thinking.
They had sex hanging from a gargoyle.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things, Tommy. I've been trying so hard to be nice to you for so long.
And
then you have to say sex on a gargoyle. Mikey.
This is the name of my Ramones cover band.
Sex on a gargoyle. Great name for a Ramones cover band. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box?
Ask somebody else. I got to grab a comic book.
Go grab a comic book. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
I have in the back of the long box the big guy and Rusty the Boy Robot.
There's no way you haven't talked about Rusty before.
He has not.
We've not covered the big guy and Rusty the Boy Robot before.
Oh, that's insane. I know how much you love this comic book. Go ahead.
You know, the comic book was just okay. The comic book came out in 1995. It was written by Frank Miller and drawn by Jeff Darrow. It was published by Dark Horse. You can get it in trade. I'm sure it's on Comixology. It was just an okay comic. In the comic, there was a genetically created giant lizard thing that was created in Japan accidentally, and it escaped and started transforming the Japanese citizens into lizard monsters, and the army tried to destroy it and failed, and their last line of defense was Rusty the Boy Robot, and he failed, so they had to call the Yanks in with the big guy, and he succeeded where everyone else failed. But why I love this comic book so much was that it spawned a TV show that ran from 1999 to 2011, and the TV show was awesome. It was the Rusty the Boy Robot was being trained by the big guy, and Rusty thought the big guy was an artificial intelligence just like himself, only older. But really, the big guy was a guy in a mech suit. But the guy in the mech suit was responsible for kind of bringing Rusty up the right way, making sure that he fought monsters and bad guys correctly with, you know, minimal damage to property and civilians, and that he was always trying to do the right thing. And it was really, really well done. The writing was fantastic. You truly believed that Rusty was an 8-year-old boy robot because he acted like an 8-year-old boy. And recently, this past July, the series Big Guy and Rusty was finally released on DVD. So I say everybody should go and buy Big Guy and Rusty now that it's been released because it was a fantastic cartoon.
Yeah, I don't remember watching the cartoon all that much, but you've always led me in the right direction before. I will look that up.
It was it was only like 26 episodes.
Only 26 episodes, but it was really good.
It was good.
All right, well, 26 episodes of something good is great. Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box for me?
I have Doom Patrol. It is part of DC's Young Animal line. It is written by Gerard Way, a former lead singer of My Chemical Romance and My Niece's One True Love, and an artist by the name of Nick Darrington. It is a weird comic book. I am not sure if this comic book is brilliant or stupid. I can't make the determination yet after just one issue.
I got to say, I've read it. It's a little of both.
Yeah, it's a really weird book. I think if somebody is interested in reading it, if you're a Gerard Way fan, you should go for it. If you are not a fan of Gerard Way, you maybe want to wait a little bit, and after a few more issues come out, I'll circle back around and give a mention of whether I think anybody should read it or not. But if you're into weird comics, this is the title for you.
Yeah, this is also our friend Andrian Kilgannon's favorite comic book. Andrea Kilgannon, by the way, changed her name legally to Kilgannon because of the character from the comic book. Didn't know that, did you?
No.
That's deep. I mean, it's almost as great as becoming Doctor Strange, but not quite.
Yeah, Doom Patrol's always been a weird comic.
My Chemical Romance breakup?
Quiet, my niece might be listening.
Don't.
My Chemical Romance break up, Mikey? I didn't think they had actually broken up.
Yeah, they broke up a while ago.
Oh, I thought they just weren't producing that many records anymore.
Yeah, they're producing zero.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the same as broken up, really.
Every time I say that, I twist the knife in my niece's back a little bit more, though. I'm sorry, Jasmine.
Well, stop twisting the knife in Jasmine's back. For my social justice part, I'd like to talk a little bit about why you should never say, "I just got gypped." Does anyone know why you shouldn't say, "I just got gypped"?
Yes.
Because it's a derogatory term about gypsies.
That's right, about about Romanians and gypsies in general. Now, comic books have kind of an odd history with gypsies and Romanians. Very oftentimes they're shown as colorful, stereotypical gypsy characters. The easiest one to point out would be Gypsy from the Justice League, or Justice League International, I suppose. And, you know, she dresses in all the bright gypsy colors, is every gypsy stereotype you've ever seen personified, looks like she's Esmeralda straight out of the Disney cartoon, and she has minor magical powers draped in the gypsy and the Romansh heritage. Now, recently, my good friend Josh showed me a clip from New York Comic Con in which David Romani is on a panel, and someone asks, you know, is the Romansh, is the gypsy people being shown in a positive life? And he goes off on a tirade about how gypsies would often break the legs of their children so that they'd be better beggars, which is a stereotype that a lot of people, you know, will say about the Romansh and gypsies, that they will do awful, awful things just to make their children into beggars or to be better thieves. The truth of the matter is that they have very poor health insurance, so a lot of children of the Romansh are often crippled. Not often, but in a higher percentage than other children are crippled. And so they do have these children with these terrible deformities. And that is part of, you know, Romansh history. And he took a lot of heat, David Romani did, for saying very vigorously that he's seen it with his own eyes when he was in Europe. And he didn't want to hear another thing about trying to make the Romansh or gypsies look better in comic books. He has since, of course, retracted that statement after getting a little bit more knowledge about gypsy and Romansh culture. It's taken a long time for gypsies and the Romansh to, you know, be seen as a disenfranchised people. And I just want to just say that saying "I've been gypped" is a racial slur. So let's try not to use it as much, guys. Shall we?
Even
everybody in on
true.
That? Even when it's
I'm
true.
Game.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for taking the pledge. Basic humanity. Go ahead, Tom.
If you want to email us instead, you can email the lucky bastard at outsidethelongbox.com, and you'll be entered into a raffle to win this week's graphic novel giveaway of the Ultimate Collection of Thunderbolts.
No one's won that yet.
It's this month. At the end of the month, they'll win.
I'm going to put in for that. I haven't actually read this yet. Now, Tommy, did you get? Were you able to edit out the interview that we did with Sanford Green when he came to Boston earlier this year?
Why, yes, we do have a wonderful interview with Sanford Green today that you actually interviewed him.
I did, and so, I try not to be a giant fanboy for it, but I love his artwork. I love where they went with Power Man and Iron Fist. I love the friendship. I love the buddy comedy team-up they got going. I love everything about this comic book, and I was so excited to talk to him that I kind of come off as a gushing fanboy. So without further ado, here's me embarrassing myself while talking to Sanford Green here in Boston.
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Strange. We're thinking outside the long box with one of my favorite artists of all time because I'm such a huge and I'm the biggest Power Man, Luke Cage fan on the planet. And I love what you've done with the reboot. Tell me a little bit about working on it and how'd you get into it?
Well, honestly, first of all, thank you, man, for the support and all of the great kind things you've been saying about my work. But I got started. Actually, Marvel contacted me a while ago about a few projects. I actually did some stuff for Civil War when that came out. I did some. I did a mini series called Runaways, and as I was working on that, they showed interest in me continuing to work with the company, and they said they had a few projects, I don't know what possessed me to say it, and I just said it. I was like, I want to do Power Man and Iron Fist. And they looked at me and was like, that's crazy because that's what we were thinking.
That's all it takes because I would have said that.
Yeah.
They could have got me.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so you've taken it, the art, in a very different direction from traditionally, which I can't tell you how much I love. Everyone who listens knows I gush about this. Love the way it looks now. What kind of, was that always your style, or did you put some thought into making it that way?
It's a combination of both. Really, I'm a huge fan of like the classic illustrators, anyone from John Buscema, or guys like John Romita, John Byrne. It's a lot of Johns back then, right?
Yeah,
and I was influenced from that, but I'm also influenced by a lot of urban culture. And it was just really good just to kind of mesh the two influences together.
All right, one last question for you.
Sure.
We do a panel on civil rights and social justice movements as reflected in comic books. And, of course, the early Iron Man, Iron Fist, and, of course, the early Luke Cage dealt with that a lot. Is that anything that you've addressed or you've spoken too much in your comic book?
Yes, we touched on all of those subjects. I think one of the things that we're trying to do is we don't want to be on a soapbox about it, because I think that can turn people away. But what we want is to just make the stories give you the sense that we're aware. I think one of the things that some comics do, not every comic, but some comics, they can get a little preachy. And we don't want that, because we want to make sure the message resonates. I think it resonates more when you speak from the experiences, from personal experiences, and not necessarily from a soapbox, if that makes sense. You see what I'm saying?
So. That makes total sense. Thanks so much for your time, and get back to your con, my friend.
Right. I sound like a starstruck idiot for that whole thing, don't I?
Yes, you do.
I don't know about starstruck.
And also, let me tell you another thing about thanks, Mikey. Let me tell you another thing about this particular interview. It took a lot of takes, not because of you know, technical issue or anything like that. It's that he was very giving of his time, and I didn't want to take away from, you know, he was making money at his table. And he was like, no, we can just do this. I'm like, no, sell your poster, sell your stuff. I mean, you're making, get your money, man. He wouldn't have if I hadn't been insisting that, you know, he talked to other people. So, you know, he was a real stand-up good guy. But, you know, a new artist, I want him to, while he's hot as he is, I want him to be able to sell as many prints and posters and sign as many autographs as he could. And he was really nice about giving me his time. So the little edits that you had to sit through is mostly because I wouldn't let him, you know, miss a sale. It was just, you got to get your money when you can get your money. Right, guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I gotta stop a hardworking man. Ain't nobody got time for that. I wanted to make sure a hardworking man got his money. And I also have to admit that I have a hard time remembering his name for some reason. Even when I met him at the next con that we went to, I'm like, oh my God, we just did an interview with you. You're so good. I love Power Man 9 for so much. And I was dressed as Power Man at the time. He's like, oh yeah, I remember you. I'm like, oh, Sanford Green. And he's like, I saw you look down, man. I saw you look down at the table. I saw you look down at the table. I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. So, yeah. And I was a little embarrassed by that. But he did give me a little bit of a, he told me something, not exactly in confidence, but that I guessed. And you guys want to hear a little bit of a spoiler that's coming up? Are you ready?
Of course we do.
This is only a spoiler for people who are really into it. Name a very obscure Power Man character that you would never think would make a comeback. He decided to give him a big comeback.
Oh, what was the guy that ran the theater? What was his name?
No. It's not the sidekick. A villain.
No. There was a little guy that ran the theater that he lived above.
Yes, I know. That's a sidekick, not a villain.
Really? He was a sidekick?
Yeah, he was never a villain. That guy, his name was... Right, I can't remember his name.
Maybe he was a villain, but...
Yeah. Anybody? Mr. Fish. Does anyone remember Mr. Fish?
No.
So Mr. Fish had the head of a damn fish. And he was a bad guy. And he was a one-shot. Just like Black Mariah, by the way. Who I never thought would make it onto the... be such a great character as Black Mariah is. Not only did Black Mariah make a big comeback in the TV show, but Black Mariah also made a huge comeback in the comic books as a really great character. So Black Mariah kind of started off as a one-shot, nothing villain, and she made it back big. So he's bringing Mr. Fish back, and basically it's a guy with a fish head, and he's kind of morphing him over a little bit into more of a, like a cross between Mr. Fish and Mr. Freeze. So Mr. Fish has to have all this elaborate stuff to breathe and stuff. And I was so happy. As soon as he said, well, I can't tell you exactly who I'm bringing back, but he's a blast from the past, and you never would have thought that he would make it. And I screamed right in his face, Mr. Fish! And he's like, oh, shit, shush! And then he showed me some of his artwork, and I was so over the top. I was crazed. So, yeah, that's a little bit of a spoiler coming up.
Isn't so did Mr. Fish in Nocta, the right? series?
Isn't he what?
Isn't Mr. Fish in the series? The Luke Cage series on Netflix?
No. I'm not done with the series.
The
The
character who's in the barbershop playing chess all the time and later turns out to be an accountant. Is Fish, right?
Yeah, but... Yeah, all right. But that's not Mr. Fish. Trust me. Mr. Fish has an actual fish head. I got to that point, and I thought about it for a second, too, but, yeah. I think they just kind of wanted to use the name.
So, Tommy, did it give you prima nocta rights on buying the original art?
Oh, you know, I should have asked that. I didn't. By the way, you really can't use prima nocta in that term. I'm just saying.
Depends on what you want to do with the art.
Yeah, I'm not going
to Well, I know what Tommy wants to do with the art.
It's true. I might actually get prima nocta with this art because I love it so much. But I probably wouldn't. Probably. And that is a prima nocta joke for anybody out there listening. You can email us at luckybastard at outsidethelongbox and tell us what prima nocta means, and we'll send you an extra comic book. All right. Does anyone have any plugs to get me out of this hole that I've dug?
I would like to fill that hole with the URL of my local comic book shop, friendlycomics.com.
Wait, friendlycomics.com? You had a different one last week.
No, friendly. Oh, it's Friendly Neighborhood Comics is the place, but the website's just friendlycomics.com.
Friendlycomics.com. Well, you know what? I'm going to give a quick shout out to mine, Kamikaze, over in Somerville. They're a great group. And let me tell you, they had a cookie-thon last week in which you could go in and be a judge and eat cookies. How often do you get to do that at a comic book shop? This is a great comic book store, I'm telling you. Kamikaze, Somerville, Massachusetts. Mikey, what do you got to plug?
There's still time left to go to Kickstarter and sponsor either Chasing Hitler by our friend Haley Nitz or Die Kitty Die Kitty Die by Dan Parent, or you should do both.
I was just going to add that next week we'll also have an interview with Dan Parent about Die Kitty Die, and we'll be playing again at that point. I love the Die Kitty Die series. It's just a lot of fun, and it's a great throwback comic with a lot of innuendo and silliness and fun for everybody, and it's a great comic.
And I'd also like to plug Kirby Crackle, who provides our Geek Rock music. You can go check out their music at kirbycracklemusic.com or on iTunes or Bandcamp.
And LT, I would like to plug our unofficial sponsor, IanLino.com. IanLino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things, including some amazing stained glass prints.
Yeah, the Colonial Viper that he just did is really good. And I'm not even a Doctor Who fan, but I love the TARDIS that he did.
Yeah, it's I haven't been to his site recently. I told him to do a Battlestar Galactica one, and he listened, apparently. Bastard.
It's weird that none of us are huge Whovians. I mean, we all kind of like Doctor Who. I have my favorite Doctor Who. You're not. I wouldn't call you a huge Whovian. Would you call yourself a huge Whovian?
I've only been watching Doctor Who since high school, and I've only read about probably 50 or 60 of the Doctor Who books. And
is this sarcasm? I can't quite pick that up. So you're
finding this out?
Yeah.
How can we just find this out about you, LT?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're a closet Whovian. That's worse. Be proud of who you are.
Come out of the police call box, LT.
Who's your favorite doctor there, LT?
Oh, it's still Tom Davidson. Still
Tom Davidson?
It truly is. Because you know what? I think he's just playing with us all. I think eventually he's going to go into the TARDIS. He's going to save the day. And he's going to produce baked goods that are sugar-free.
I do have to say that guy is awesome.
And he keeps reinventing himself. But Tom Baker.
I got to say, I'm a Tom Baker guy myself.
David Tennant.
Josh, do you have a favorite doctor? David Tennant over there. Josh?
Nope. That's not a Doctor Who guy.
Now, Josh and I have tried on a couple of occasions. We're like, we should watch. What's your favorite doctor? We asked fans. Mike, we did this too. Tell us your favorite Doctor Who. We'll go watch it. And Whovians are like, oh, great. And they give us a little list. And I go watch, and I'm like, this is – nope. I don't want to put it down. It's just not for me. It's just not my flavor of geek. Someone told us Santa Claus and the Astro Man. Do you remember that one, Mike?
Yeah, it was a Christmas special. They were like, you have to go watch it. We actually watched it that night when we were in St. Louis.
We did. Everyone's like, you got to watch this. This is the best Doctor Who. And we watched it, and it just missed us, guys. I don't know why. It just misses us. Not by much, but it does. All right. But we're not going to
high school.
Yeah, we're not going to diss it because it just isn't our flavor of nerd. And you know what I always say? Me, Tom, you know what I always say? Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. LT, what do you always say? That's right. You say nothing. You say nothing because you got nothing. LT.
I always say I wish somebody would produce some sugar-free baked goods that tasted good.
You know what? I'm going to work on that for you. Josh, I forget because I've been drinking pretty heavily. Is this your sector?
I don't give a shit. This ain't my sector.
ain't my monkey, ain't my circus. All right, guys. Have a great week. And next week is episode number 44. Anyone who knows me knows that 44 is my lucky number. So we have to do something that's Tom related. We got to do one of my favorite characters.
Oh, yeah.
Before the Underwear Finally Tore is also a good name for a Wham cover band.
Real laugh hiding fake laugh hiding real pain.
Yeah, you got. All right. Do we have any plugs to get away from this horrible image of Josh hanging on a hook?
Oh, I'm just going to go with my local comic book shop again, Friendly Neighborhood Comics. It's just friendlycomics.com. Go check them out.
All right. I would also like to plug Outside the Long Box at the Long Box Guys. That is our Twitter account. Please go on there. And a new sponsor, Unbreakable Underoos. Unbreakable Underoos for when you really want to torture your brother. They will not break or rip. Hey, why is that young boy wearing silk and Kevlar underwear? Shh. Wow. Tommy, what do you got?
I would like to plug this month's giveaway. We are giving away Thunderbolts Ultimate Collection to someone who emails us at luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com. Email us, let us know what you like about the podcast, what you don't like, suggest topics, etc., so forth, and you will be entered in to win a copy of Thunderbolts Ultimate Collection. And also, I would like to plug IanLino.com, IanLino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things.
Well, I have two Kickstarters from friends of the podcast that I would like to promote. One is Chasing Hitler, issues number 2, 3, and 4 by our friend Haley Nitz. And the other one is Die Kitty Die by Dan Parent. He's got a Kickstarter on right now.
I'm sorry, what's the name of that comic book?
Die Kitty Die, which is also adult comic.
And by the way, if my good friend Tommy ever gets off his butt and unloads that Dan Parent interview, we talk about nothing but Die Kitty Die. It's a great comic book, especially if you're a fan of the old Harvey comics, because a lot of those are parodied. He goes out of his way, I should mention, to say that they're not really parodying the exact Harvey characters, but read the comic book and you tell me. It's a great comic. You've read them, right, Mike?
No, I haven't read it yet, although I have supported the Kickstarter for the second volume of Die Kitty Die.
Well, I got one from Dan, and it's really, really kind of funny. Do you know what the premise is?
Yes, she is a TV star, and the network has decided to kill her, so that way their ratings will go up. Is that right?
That's right, and she's also a real witch in real life. She plays kind of a Sabrina-esque character, and they're having a terrible time actually killing her. And it's kind of monkey shines and hijinks all about that. And it's really very funny.
I've got it in my stack of comics to read. I just haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I really should add that to mine at Kamikaze. That's a real good one. Oh, and thanks, by the way, for telling me to get the Howling Commandos one. Man, that's a fun read. I'm having a great time with that.
I'd also like to thank Kirby Crackle. You can go to KirbyCracklemusic.com to check out their tunes or go to iTunes or Bandcamp. They are the providers of our Geek Rock, who will play part of one of their songs at the end of the podcast also.
Ooh, will you play Rig Capacity? That's my favorite.
No.
Damn it. All right. Jeez. This acid reflux is making you mean as shit. God damn. All right. Anybody else? If not, I'm going to say goodbye to all of my friends. And Josh, I wandered in here kind of off the street. Was this your sector?
No, I'm no longer maintaining this particular sector. Move along.
So this isn't your sector?
This is not my sector.
All right, just making sure. And Mike, what is Thinking Outside the Long Box to you?
A slow, painful march to the infinity. No, I'm just kidding.
Excellent.
It's like drunk history, but for comics.
And remember what I always say, don't diss what you hate, just promote what you love. And Tommy, have a good night. Bye.
seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me, but from the corner of my eye I catch a glimpse of evil light. The spirit tries to swallow me like I'm just some guy with